Hi, and welcome to Chatter, the podcast from Kainos about all things tech, design, and product. I'm Josephine Farr, your guest host for today, and I'm here with Martin Corbett, a delivery manager at Kainos. In this episode, we are talking about mindfulness and emotional intelligence, and Martin will be telling us what this is, why we should care about it, and some of the ways you can think about applying it in your job. Say hi, Martin.
Hi, Joe.
Okay, and before we dive into the questions, let's find out a little bit more about you.
Okay, so I'm Martin. I've been at Kainos for a year. I'm a delivery manager here, so I've worked on a number of interesting projects. And before that, I've had quite a long career in delivery and consulting and technology generally, working in big banks, software houses and consulting houses, working on different projects. It's been quite an interesting career so far.
Okay, brilliant. And Martin, can you tell us in a nutshell, what is mindfulness and emotional intelligence?
There's a couple of key themes, I guess. One is about allowing ourselves to see the present moment clearly, training our mental processes, if you like, so that we can sort of see and appreciate what's going on around us and get out of, if we're kind of trapped in a sort of a mental black hole or whatever, seeing the world around us in a better way. But another part of it that's probably more key, having an awareness of the thoughts and feelings that are happening as they happen. Because when you have that, you can adapt them and control them to overcome difficult situations. Emotional intelligence is kind of related. It's the same kind of thing, self-awareness, self-management, self-regulation of thoughts, but also it's got kind of a motivational element and talks about empathy for other people. So you'll have heard of something called an emotional quotient, perhaps. That's about how well we understand other people's feelings and emotional state as well. So it goes beyond the control and understanding of our own thoughts and looks at how we relate those to other people as well.
Okay. And how is this, like, when did you become interested in this kind of subject matter?
I guess that came a few years ago. I'd had a pretty smooth sailing career for several years and you know, no real problems with anything. And then I moved to a new company where it's a very different culture, very different expectations and very different levels of demand. And it was much more difficult to perform in those in that environment. It was kind of what might be classed a toxic culture in some people, but it was certainly quite difficult. And there was a lack of support network, meaning it was much more challenging to kind of be successful there. And that led me into kind of, I suppose, examining my own behaviors and motivations and starting to question whether I was doing the right things and whether I was dealing in the correct way with the stress of the situation. And from that, I kind of learnt about different techniques and ways to kind of challenge my own behaviours and improve my own performance.
Okay. And I mean, I don't know loads about mindfulness and emotional intelligence, but it does feel like it's quite kind of the now. So they're words that I recognise, and there's lots of those kind of colouring books that you see, kind of mindfulness colouring books.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, in your opinion, like, why do you think this has kind of suddenly become such a kind of prominent thing that people are talking about?
Well, it's a funny thing because mindfulness therapy and counselling goes back to the 1970s. It came from a stress reduction program that an academic put together at University of Massachusetts. But even before that, it goes back to kind of things like Buddhist teachings. Meditation techniques is kind of the ultimate origin. The meditation that it came from was called, let me see if I can say this correctly, Vipassana, which translates as clear awareness or insight. So it goes back to meditation for awareness of your situation, your mental processes and your surroundings. And emotional intelligence has also been around since the 80s. So it's not new, but it's becoming more of the now for a number of reasons. If you look at the data around mental well-being these days, I think it's a big topic anyway, but it costs the UK economy £33 billion a year in lost productivity through people's, you know, poor mental health, absence, sickness, attrition, and worse. It's estimated that 300,000 people a year leave their job due to mental health problems in the UK. I mean, that's a huge number. When you consider the cost of recruiting new people, it can be up to, what, £30,000 per employee. So just look at the economic benefits of dealing with this. And I think there's a lot of media news around this kind of thing as well. So I think it's just, its awareness has gone through the roof in the last few years. And then people are looking at techniques that can address that. And these are two of the key ones, I think.
Okay. You know, obviously those are kind of some really bold, that's a lot of data that kind of I think would speak very loudly to lots of organisations. You know, is there any ways or what ways would you suggest this could be kind of implemented, like mindfulness and emotional intelligence, like some of these things could be implemented?
Yeah, so I think while there's a number of things the individual can do, and I'm keen to talk about those, from an organisational level, there's also a number of things the C-suite can look at. Firstly, promoting that active network of peer support and mentoring. One of the key challenges around stressful situations is that people haven't got the support around them, the people to talk to, people to bounce ideas off, and the ways to externalise the issues they're facing. So I think having that active network that allows employees to build strong connections with their colleagues, that's probably the first one. And then resiliency and mindfulness training, I think that's a key part of it. Some formal structure around how people can improve their resiliency and their ability to deal with these stressful situations. So sponsoring that is another thing a company could do. And then thirdly, I think on a more personal level, I think leading by example, we need to see our leaders saying that these behaviours are normal, and that this is a safe space, and you know, revealing their own vulnerabilities and their own techniques, because people connect to that and will see that as a good example, even if they can't see it in themselves. So I think they're the three areas that I would like companies to really kind of push forward on.
They all sound kind of very sensible. I guess what is also interesting is maybe hearing about some of your own experiences of like applying mindfulness and emotional intelligence kind of at work or in projects. Because I think otherwise it can feel a bit kind of meta, like it's like, yeah, oh, a nice idea, but actually, what does this look like kind of day to day?
So it's, the good news is it's simple to start. These are the kind of techniques that do take a while to kind of master, if you like, but to start is easy. There's lots of things you can do. I mean, I think one of the main things is just getting out of your everyday routines, just seeing the world from a different kind of an angle. Maybe just take some time each day to think about the scenarios that are going on around you that don't involve you personally. So if you think about it like that, you start to see, what might other people be thinking in these scenarios? What's going on around me? Just getting out, walking around, doing some people watching, sort of seeing what's going on in the world around. Maybe a lunchtime walk or sit in a different place in the office for a day, that kind of thing, literally seeing the world from a new point of view. You know, complex roles over the years, and these techniques have proven to be necessary in a number of those. I was on a quite challenging project that I came into where the culture was not good, the client buy-in was bad, there was a lot of interpersonal problems, basically a lot of problems. And as a project manager on that, a lot of the accountability and I suppose blame ultimately comes on that role. So that was quite a challenging time in terms of just how to understand what's going on. More crucially, how am I reacting to the stress and strains I'm being put under? And I found one of the most difficult things about it was that I was not even really aware that I was in a difficult situation or a difficult place and how I was behaving in relation to that. And so it got quite stressful, and I needed to really externalize my thought processes and start to understand why I was behaving in the ways I was behaving. I was not pleased with the way things were going, not pleased with my own kind of behaviors and responses. And really it took some kind of external event for me to actually start talking to other people about these challenges. And once I did, I started to realize that I was able to start to examine whether I was doing the right things, really slow down my thought processes and apply some logic to it. Was kind of the crucial breakthrough, I think. And since then, I've been using that in all my project scenarios, which tend to be quite complex, fast moving. Things change fast and you need to adapt fast, but you need to adapt in the right way. And that's where I think the value of this comes, because it gets you to think rationally and objectively about the decisions you're making. One of the key phrases from this whole topic is around respond rather than react. And it's a subtle but important difference where responding is thinking about the arguments, working out why you're thinking the way you're thinking about it, and then coming up with a response. Whereas reacting is a much more immediate, visceral thing, perhaps, where you're just going with what instinctively feels right. And when you're in a stressful situation, your logic pathways are, you know, all mangled up, and you have to be careful that you're not making irrational decisions, which a lot of people under stressful situations definitely do. in extreme scenarios leading to kind of self-harm or anything like that. That comes from irrational thinking, which comes from reacting rather than responding.
With mindfulness and emotional intelligence, like, how did you, you know, learn about it? Was it you were feeling these things and you went searching for something, or was it someone recommended it to you? Or
it was a recommendation. It's from my wife, in fact. I think what some of the damaging elements of stressful work scenarios is it impinges on all aspects of your life. It doesn't just impinge in the workplace. You don't have a stressful day and then go home and have a happy and fulfilling social life or anything else usually. And, you know, it was affecting outside aspects of my life. My wife picked up on that rather clearly and, said you should be looking at different ways of dealing with this rather than, you know, getting cross or upset at home. So she put me onto these kind of ideas. So, and I think that's probably an important message. It's really hard to be self-aware about this stuff at the beginning. It's really difficult to know that you are dealing with this. Irrational things appear rational when your mind's in that kind of scrambled state. So I think having external voices, and that's why I talk about active peer support networks, things like that, people need to have your back in this. Otherwise, you may not be aware that you're dealing with this.
Which I guess goes back to the importance of an organisation being on board with this, because then other people are more aware of it and therefore more likely to notice and be conscious if there are things they should be thinking about and doing.
I guess it's particularly challenging in a consulting business where people can be off on site or working from home or doing a lot of travelling. It becomes more difficult to build those connections sometimes. You're more of a singleton out there in the world, and perhaps you're not getting the support you need, which I think is a really positive thing over the last few years, that companies are starting to become aware of this and the situation's changing.
Okay, brilliant. What is Skills for Me, for those who might not know?
So Skills for Me is a Kainos program. You get an allocation every year that you can use on anything you want. But what's great about it is it's not about your job. It's not about project skills, training in a kind of a work scenario. It's really about doing something completely different that develops you outside of your workplace. People have done driving courses. People have done stone carving. People have done beer making. People have done anything and everything. And I think that's great for mindfulness because, again, it's a change of perspective, change of view. Meet different people, do something completely unrelated, and sort of get maybe a bit more perspective about your work life and how that relates to the rest of, you know, your full life.
So earlier we were talking a bit about how to kind of implement this within organisations, but I guess maybe some of the problems you might have is like, how do you get senior management to actually kind of care about this and support this as a kind of initiative and a programme?
So I think there's a couple of elements. I think on one level, It just feels the right thing to do for our people, you know, a humanistic level. But I suppose more importantly, also at the bottom line, or equally importantly at the bottom line, there's sound numbers behind this. Research suggests that more than a fifth of organisations now cite mental illness as the primary cause of long-term absence. It's over a fifth of all businesses. And the number of employees who leave their jobs each year due to these problems, 300,000. But I think even just going back to what I said, even on a more personal level, I think just if our CEOs and our senior leaders can lead by example, they can really show the qualities they want to see in the rest of the organization: openness, authenticity, courage to share your own stories of coping with these scenarios. I think that is a huge benefit to everybody.
Finally, if people remember one thing about mindfulness and emotional intelligence, what do you think it should be?
I think the main soundbite, if I could get it down to one, would be about responding rather than reacting. I think slowing down your thinking and considering what you're thinking, why you're thinking it, and what kind of biases you might have introduced in that, or whether it's logical and makes objective sense, rather than just immediately reacting on an emotional level and kind of then living with the consequences. I think that's the key thing, and mindfulness is all around getting your brain better at logically analysing the way you're thinking, whether it makes sense.
Thanks, Martin. That's been really interesting and I think will give us all something to think about. Thanks for sharing.
You're welcome.
That's it for another episode. I'd like to say a special thank you to Martin Corbett, Josephine Farr. Please share and subscribe to listen to more episodes. The Chatter team is JT Tekkar, V Rizazi, Olivia Sharp and Adam Dimby. I am Abby Laurie. Thank you and goodbye.